Once again, we've got another picture that was a result of me playing with my son out in the yard. In this case, we rode his tricycle to the park. Well, he rode his tricycle. I didn't so much ride the tricycle as I did follow behind him. And we got maybe two-thirds of the way to the park, and he said, "Daddy, can you hold my trike?" And he just wanted to run. So I picked up his trike, and I just sort of walked with it. Well, he ran to the park. I didn't really intend on taking pictures necessarily, but I brought my camera with me since it was good lighting and good weather. It turns out the setting sun, this is maybe 7 o'clock-ish on a weekend, it was about 7 o'clock, and so there was setting sun, good light for photos, get that nice warm glow, casting these nice shadows. I thought it might be fun to take a picture of his tricycle. I kind of like before I get to that, I tried a few different angles. I got super low to the ground eventually. And this one, I was actually laying on the ground. So the camera was maybe – I mean, you could see the blades and grass right in the foreground. The camera lens was maybe like – 6 inches above the ground, just above the grass. And it can be a little weird to put yourself in that position if you're not familiar with it. Most of us, we'll get our iPhone or whatever we have with us to take a picture. And if something's low to the ground, we'll kind of point downwards. If you can crouch down, man, it's like a whole new world of photographic possibilities opens up to you. And sometimes if you just lay down on the ground, it can feel weird laying on the ground, pointing a camera at stuff, but you can get some really cool shots that way. And I'm not saying this is necessarily one of them, but just it's an example of how altering your perspective physically can change the photo. This trike is so small that unless you're really low to the ground, it doesn't really convey the sense of the trike being – it just makes the trike seem silly and little. But putting yourself low on the ground, like right on the same level as the trike in this case, kind of gave the tricycle a little more presence and a little more impression on the viewer of the photo, hopefully anyway. Anyway, if you look at the framing, there's that big tree in the background, and I tried a few other angles, some without that tree, but I kind of like how the tree in the background helps draw the attention to the trike. It's essentially putting the red and the white of the trike against a really dark background so it stands out. It'd be fun to try this in an open field with a clear horizon. And so it'd be fun to try this with nothing on the horizon. But in this case, it was either the tree or the houses. And with the bike or the trike against the houses, it was a little more muddled what you're looking at. And the tricycle didn't really stand out as much. So I had to take that into account when framing the shot. This picture illustrates the importance of lighting. So how do you want your particular subject lit? If you don't have anything to control the light, then you just have the sunlight. And so how are you going to control your subject in order to get the lighting that you want? Are you going to use a flash? What about the shadows? All these things are stuff you have to consider when you're taking a picture. In this one, I used an aperture of f2.8. Again, I wanted that shallow depth of field. But you'll notice, and it's a little hard to see in this picture unless you go to the full size, the back wheel, the back left wheel, is just slightly out of focus. And so maybe 2.8 was a little too shallow. Maybe I could have gone up to like 3.3 or something like that. But other than that, I'm happy with the depth of field that I was able to get on this photo. I also cropped it just a bit, mostly on the top and left-hand side of the picture. It probably wasn't even necessary. I was pretty happy with the in-camera composition, but I wanted to bring it in just slightly on that trike. And sometimes you hear people talking about megapixels. Well, this camera is 10 megapixels. This is 20. This is 25. The D800 is a 38-megapixel camera. I shot this with my D200. It's a 10-megapixel camera, and almost I'd say like 95% of the photos on this weekly 50 block are shot with that D200, which is a super old camera. It's not a new camera, and I do that because I don't know. I leave my 50 on there, and I take it outside a lot, and I don't really care if it gets damaged because it's so old. It's inexpensive if I wanted to straight up replace it, like buy a different one. They're like $200 or something, but in shooting with that old camera, where was I even going with that? I was talking about the megapixels. So it's 10 megapixels, and nowadays people talk about megapixels. Well, this camera is only 8 megapixels. This one's 15. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. this picture at 10 megapixels is just fine. It would have zero impact if it were taken at 20 megapixels or 24 megapixels. The only advantage of those megapixels is it allows for greater cropping in post. And every now and then, I'd say if I take 100 shots, 98 of them are fine at 10 megapixels. It's that 2% roughly that I want to crop a little too much. And I wasn't able to zoom anything at all with my lens because I shoot with primes. And so I want to crop on my subject. And that 10 megapixels is just not quite enough. But even then, it mostly it's fine. So I'm kind of getting off track here, but I want to illustrate that if you've got a camera that maybe it's old, maybe you shoot with like a 6 megapixel camera from the early 2000s, and there's a lot of those still in use. It's fine because unless you're doing crazy cropping, you don't need all those megapixels. It's about the lens. It's about the image sensor. It's about the dynamic range. It's about how you use light. It's not about the megapixels. So I'll get off that and continue now. It's also cool to study the exposure data afterwards. I shot this at ISO 200 at f/2.8, and it resulted in an exposure of 1/2000th of a second. I shot this in aperture priority, so I set the ISO and the aperture, and the camera decided what shutter speed to use. If you study this data, if you're not sure how to go about shooting in manual mode, if you study this data, you can start to learn what you can adjust to get the photo you want. 1/2000th of a second is really, really fast. You don't need that fast to get a picture of a stationary tricycle. I could have easily adjusted, gone down to ISO 100, which would have, it's essentially identical to 200. I mean, there's not much difference, but it's just a slightly better color information that you'll get at ISO 100. Slightly less grain, even though, again, there's like virtually no difference between 100 or 200. But I could have adjusted things to still get a good exposure. And if you study the exposure data on your photo, and if you click through this photo, if you click on the photo, it'll take you to the Flickr page and you can see the exposure data. If you start studying that, studying that and learning about it, you can learn then to control it and shoot in manual mode for when you really want to take full control over stuff. Finally, sorry about the beeping. My phone just went off. I coughed and then my computer beeped. Sorry about all that. Finally, my last takeaway before we end this really long podcast here, it's fun to take ordinary things like a tricycle and photograph them in a new light. Get it? Light. Anyway, you might want to try that someday. Just take something that you think is ordinary and plain and take some pictures of it to make it look a little more interesting or special.